Just chapter 47. As we discussed yesterday, the story of this chapter really starts in the previous chapter. I have no idea why the person who divided the chapters stopped it here. And the story is, and in general, we could sort of make a general story or general header for the stories in this chapter 47. Although the end of it again is something that connects really the next chapter, right at the beginning of Parshas Vayechi. But the basic story is, and it's, I think, something that in some sense belongs already to previous chapters, all the way back to chapter 41 or 42, I think, which described the beginning of the hunger, the beginning of the famine in Mitzrayim. So basically, what we get here is like this. But first, some other things. What we get is number one, the way in which Yosef, I could say, manipulates or organizes so that his brothers and his father should get what he wants them to get from Paro. So we understand that the basic situation is Yosef is the king or the vice king in Mitzrayim, but he's still under Paro. As Paro said, when he gave him the permission, when he crowned him, so to speak, he said, "I will still be above you, so you're the highest authority in Mitzrayim besides for myself." Which means that although Yosef can maybe do many things, he still needs Paro's permission for certain things, or I don't know what exactly the parameters of the authority that he was given was. To what extent Paro was micromanaging things and so on. But what we see here is that Yosef has a certain goal. He wants his brothers to receive a certain place to live, and apparently a place to live is more than a place to live if you think about it. It sort of means getting a title, so to speak, on the land, because you can't just live wherever you want, especially Mitzrayim, which was, as we'll see later in the chapter, even more explicitly, an extremely centrally managed place. It's not like even the peasants there, so to speak, didn't really own their land. Everything belongs to the king. Everyone works for the kingdom, and it's the king that decides where you live and where you go. And now Yosef, when he brings down his family and he tells them that he will give them to eat, he will support them. What that means is really that Paro will support them, right? Because Yosef doesn't entirely own Mitzrayim, that he could promise Mitzrayim's riches to them. So he still needs somehow to convince or to manipulate or to achieve that Paro should give them what he wants. And apparently it's not clear, we could read in a lot of things into this, but apparently on the one hand doesn't want them to live in next to him or entirely with Paro. He wants to live in a separate place called Goshen, which as we see later seems to have been a separate place from where Yosef himself lived, and maybe a separate place from where Paro lived. Seems to have been also, so on the one hand that's like a negative part about it. He wants them to live not in this sort of center, in the administrative center. He wants to live in Goshen. On the other hand, there seems to be some good part of it. Apparently, this Goshen had good lands for pasture, which matched well with their needs. So he comes to his brothers and he tells them, "I will bring you to Paro." And you, when Paro asks you what your occupation is, you will tell him that you are shepherds, and therefore he will give you Goshen, which matches to you. And it seems like, as we discussed yesterday already, it seems like there's something not entirely true with this, because otherwise he doesn't have to tell them that Ishtet is Paro. In other words, maybe they would have wanted actually to live somewhere else, but he sort of convinces them to say this so that they will have that. And now, at the beginning of this chapter, that's what we have. We have Yosef comes to Paro, and he tells him, "My brothers and my father have came with all of their possessions, especially with their sheep, and they're in Goshen." He says, "They are already in Goshen." A minute ago, we see that Paro had to give them Goshen, but now he says they're already there. He seems to like sort of have made this an established fact, something like this fact's on the ground, and now go fight with it. And he says he takes five of his brothers, not all of them, some of them, and he presents five of his brothers for Paro. Rashi says these were the five weaker ones because, again, he's trying to manipulate Paro not to take them into his army. But whatever it is, it seems like maybe something we saw earlier, that when 10 people came to Yosef, he claimed that they were spies, and we said that 10 people altogether, 10 adults, it seems suspicious. So he took only five, which seems a little less suspicious, more like a family situation than like a military occupation happening here. And Paro follows the script that Yosef told them. He asked them what their occupation is, and they answer as the script Paro told them, and they add what they've understood from Yosef that they should tell Paro, that they came to live in this land because there's no pasture in Canaan, and they ask him to give them to live, be able to live in Goshen. So then we have the answer that Paro gave to Yosef. This seems to not so much cohere with the previous story, because now Paro repeats the fact that Yosef told them. So in the previous And Pasuk Aleph, we had Yosef tell Pare, Uvai v'achai, my father and my brothers came to me. And then Pare says, Yosef, your brothers and your father came to you. That seems like a little weird. If he just told him, why is he repeating it back to him? I'm not entirely sure how to understand this. Maybe it's like some kind of formal thing where, like he says, he acknowledges that they came. And he says, the land of Egypt is before you. In other words, you have the right to settle them wherever you want. You could let them sit and settle in Goshen. And he adds, if you know that some of them are Anshe Chayil, which Anshe Chayil is a title in the Torah, I think it means something like Chevreman, something like someone who is capable, or Chayil doesn't mean military or doesn't mean possessions. It somehow sometimes has both connotations, but Anshe Chayil seems to usually mean powerful men, men who are men, men who know how to lead. So he says, if there are some of them who are capable, who are powerful, in that way, make them ministers, sure, or ministers, maybe not the correct translation for ministers, something like leaders of livestock, chiefs in charge of mine. So, in other words, he knows that they're all shepherds. That's not the point. The point is that some of them are capable of maybe managing a greater flock, or, you know, being the managers of the managers for Pare and so on. So that's Pare's response. And then that part of the story is over. Now, in between, we have one more presentation that Moses presents to Pare. He presents his father Yaakov to Pare. It's not clear what the point of this is. He presents Yaakov to Pare. This seems to be part of Yosef's trying to get Pare to understand how important his family is, or maybe how not important they are, so he should give them what they need. I don't know how to understand this within the context of the whole story, what Yosef wants from this. But he brings his father, and it says, Vayam midel lifnei Pare. In previous, it says, by his brothers, by Atzigim lefnei Pare. Might be some difference in the sort of levels of honor. Like, he presents his brothers to Pare, which is a way of saying, like, you know, we're your slaves, we're under you. But his father, we see in the way he presents his father to Pare, that his father, in somehow, in some sense, stands above Pare, or stands beside him. And Yaakov obviously was a chief. He had 70 people under him, like, he had this big family. It's not like he was just a person coming who needs to, like, spend time with him. Of course, Pare is the great king here, so he does need his permission, he does need his grace, but Yaakov seems to act in some sense as at least an equal to Pare. And we see also later in the end of the chapter how Yaakov asks to be buried not in Mitzrayim. So there's some sense in which Yaakov is not becoming under Pare, unlike the brothers and later the children, which we'll know, of course, in the beginning of Shemos, entirely become subjugated to Mitzrayim and to Pare. Yaakov doesn't ever become subject to Pare entirely. And maybe that's the Vayamidel of Pare. And Yaakov blesses Pare, which, of course, again, blessing doesn't entirely always necessarily mean that you're above someone else. I mean, you could have like this, a slave can bless his master in some sense, but it seems to be, and it's repeated twice in the beginning and the end of this little part of the story, that Yaakov blessed Pare. So it seems to me that Yaakov is seen to have some power to bless. We know being able to bless is something that belongs to the priesthood always. We see that already by Malkitzedek and Avraham. We see that about the Kehanim, of Birchas Kehanim famously. So it seems like when Yaakov is blessing Pare, it's saying that Yaakov is seen, even relative to Pare, as having some kind of power, some kind of capability to bless him. And the only discussion, the only dialogue Yaakov has with Pare is, again, kind of weird. It connects sort of to the description of the kind of person Yaakov is, or the kind of way that he spoke about himself. But how it relates to this the dialogue that Yaakov has with Pare, what Yosef is trying to achieve here, whatever politics he's trying to create between him and Pare and Yaakov, I don't know. Dialogue the Yaakov has with Pare is that Pare inquires of him how old he is. Seems to have been like some kind of formality, which made sense. Maybe nowadays sometimes people will think it's not respectful, you know, to ask an old person how old he is. Like, so you want me to die? Apparently that was correct. Or maybe it also connects to the thought I was saying, where like maybe he's older than Pare. Pare is the king, but he's maybe not 130 years old now. So, So on the one hand, he is telling Pare that he's very old and older than him probably, but on the other hand, he uses it to complain, and he sort of compares himself to his ancestors, to his parents, and he says, I'm 130 years old, but there've been few and bad have been my years. So it's a very interesting statement to say, especially to say to Pare, like, why is he trying to say this? There's Midrashim that criticize Yaakov for speaking this way. In any case, that's what he says. It seems like saying, like, relative to you, maybe I'm very old and I seem very successful, but I have my own standards of success. And relative to that, relative to my parents, my ancestors, I'm not successful at all. And that's the end of the story. And then he blesses Pada and he leaves. Vayetzim lifnei Pada. It's a very interesting little story of Yaakov meeting Pada. And as I said, I don't know entirely what it's about or what it's for. Okay. Then what we have is the conclusion of the previous shtadlunis, so to speak. We have Yosef has made his brothers go to Pada and give them the place, and that's what he does. He Yosef gives him a place. It's interesting that he gives them a place in Beretz Ramses. It's not Beretz Goshen, so I don't know how it would change. He seems to the whole time he's trying to get them into Ramses, into Goshen, and suddenly when it comes to the action, when it comes to actually doing it, he gives it to him a place in Eretz Ramses. Rashi says that Ramses is in Goshen. Still weird. Why would the name change? I don't know. Now what we have is what I said. The next part of the chapter, which is maybe the next important part, is really a continuation of the story we had already in chapter 41, I think, which was how Yosef managed Mitzrayim in this famine. Remember that he prepared all the food and put it away in some storehouses, so they should have it in the 7 years of famine. And we already had before, in a very short version, we have that the people came to Paray and Paray told them to listen to whatever Yosef said. And I think this is the details of that story. So we have the story starts, there was no bread, there's nothing to eat in the entire land, the entire Mitzrayim, because there's a very heavy hunger. And they're very tired, they're very hungry. They're Vatela, it's an interesting verb, we don't know exactly what it means. They seem to be very hungry or very, 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 very much hungry. And they come to, now Yosef has all the money from everywhere because they're all buying the food from Yosef. But then the food money finishes. So they come to Yosef and they tell him, what should we do? We bought all the food, but now we have no money left. So Yosef said, give me your animals, give me your mikneh, and I'll give you food in return for that. And that's what they do for 1 year. Then the next year, and the second year, it's not clear if this is the second year of the hunger, maybe it's some other year, because maybe 1 year or 2 years their money lasted. And they come to him and they tell him, look, we have no more food, we have no more animals to give you, we can give you only ourselves and our land. And Yosef says, okay. This is a sort of origin story for how taxes work. They give themselves and their land to Paroi, and Yosef tells them he will give them the grain to plant, but when it grows, they will have to give one-fifth back to Paroi. That's sort of as if they really sold it to Paroi, but of course they need to eat for themselves, and that will be four out of five, 80% will go to them, but 20% will go to Paroi. And besides for this, it says also he moved them around, which seems to be like part of like making the sale real. So it's not like just like a formality. Each person gives his land to Paroi. It's really very real. He gave it to the government, and the government sort of redistributes everything. But it happens to be that everyone gets, in the end of this redistribution is not that you're working in sort of direct way for Paroi. It's like you're working on your land still, or on the land, so to speak, allotted to you from the king. And all you have to give him is his tax of 5%. And there is an exception. There's an exception, which is the priesthood, which does not have to pay tax. And the reason for this is given here that because the priesthood didn't need to sell themselves to Paroi, because they originally had their own allotment of food from Paroi, which means Paroi would give them his food. It was like his obligation to give them food. Therefore, they didn't have to go through this whole process of selling themselves, and therefore, they don't have to pay this 20% tax. And there's a very interesting response of the people where they say, like, Hachisuni, you've made us alive, you've kept us alive, you've made us alive. We find favor in your eyes, and we're going to be slaves to Paroi. So, and this becomes a law, or I don't know if the word chok should be translated as a law, some set thing which stays until this day. A fifth of everything in Mitzrayim goes to Paroi, besides for the priesthood. So that's this story. It's a very important story. There's a lot to think about, but that's the story. Then the end of the story is there's two things, and the next, like I said, the last part really goes together with the next part, in some sense, the next chapter. There's one thing which is the continuation of the previous story. So we have Yosef got his brothers, Bnei Yisrael, he got them a place in Goshen, and now we hear about their success there. They have many children. They have success apparently in their lands, and they also have success in their children. And then we have the ending of the story, the beginning of the end of this story, or really we could talk about the beginning of the end of Yaakov's life, and then the next chapters are really all about the death of Yaakov, which is a very important motif in Sefer Bereishis, and generally to tell you how one leader or one patriarch here dies and gives over the his blessing, so to speak, and really means all of his power, all of his everything to the next generation. So we have first like a pasuk which really belongs to like series of pasukim which count years for everyone and give the full lives of everyone. We have the Yaakov lived in Mitzrayim for 17 years and total lived 147 years. Of course, this matches what we learned before, that he spoke to Paddy and told but he's 130. That pasuk might exist in some sense to belong together with this series of like counting the years of Yaakov and what he did in each time. And then we have going back, right? This is, but he still didn't die. Now, that's like a summary pasuk. Doesn't really belong here in some sense. I don't know where it does belong, but it doesn't entirely belong here. We're going back to the story of the long story of Yaakov still being alive and how he's planning for his death and how all of that happens. So, as Yisrael's days come close to dying, in other words, he knows that he's becoming old and he knows that he's going to die. He calls Yosef and he asks him to promise him to do him a favor, not to bury him in Mitzrayim, but that he should die with his parents and he should be carried to be buried in their graves. This seems to be an important thing. We had remember how it said before when Yaakov went down to Mitzrayim and he went to Beersheba, and God told him that he will Yosef Yosef Yotel and he'll raise him back. And we have also in the story of Avraham, where it says, you come to your parents in peace. And it seems to have been a big thing to be buried along with your parents. That's like considered a happy end to a happy life if you're buried along with your parents. So Yaakov, although he's in exile here, although he's somewhat doing well in exile, right? He's doing well here. He doesn't want to stay here. He wants to return to his parents. So that's, I think, the first thing. Of course, there's like another thing, which is, like we said, Yaakov isn't subject to Mitzrayim. Yaakov isn't subject to Paray, and there's like a negative thing. In other words, there's a focus on the negative where don't bury me in Mitzrayim. Of course, there's many interpretations for why I would be against burying in Mitzrayim, but the most simple thing is just the continuation of this. I don't belong to Mitzrayim. I belong to where I came from, and I'm going to use my power. The fact that Yosef, who is my son, is the prince in Mitzrayim, so that I should be able to be carried back to my place. And he gets Yosef to swear to him that that will happen, and he bows at the head of the bed, which means probably bows to Yosef. So there's some dialogue here where Yosef in some sense is the king, so he bows to him. And of course this has to do with the dreams that he dreamt. And on the other side, he got Yosef to swear to him to do his wish.